The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house, so looking forward to having Duggar fire up here in just a second. Hey, I will say this, folks, that tomorrow, Friday, if you're listening on Thursday, is our second annual CFCI fishing tournament, and Doug and I are partners.
Yes, once again.
That's right. Last year, I think we finished second or third.
We did. We did.
Second place. The Belchers, they killed us at the end by a technique that
they just outthought us. That's all it was. We all have the same baits, but they just had one little thought that we didn't have, and that's right where the fish were at.
So if you're on Lake Lemon tomorrow, being Friday, and you see six goofy people out there on boats, actually 12 people on six goofy boats, then you'll know that's us. So we're going to be fishing from 7 a.m. until about 2:30 at Lake Lemon. So we will bring the results to you on next week's show. As I'm going to be actually with Ed Slott next week over in Philadelphia, so we have to get this worked out with you guys to anchor down the show.
Okay.
Let's do a little news of the week brought to you, of course, by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, supported by us at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. Learn more about the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame by going to mcshof.com. Well, sell in May, go away. We haven't talked much about that this year, and analyzing the S&P 500 since 1990, the six-month periods ending on April 30th have beaten the six-month periods ending on October 31st, 18 out of 28 years. Tapping the brakes over the course of the 55 Federal Reserve meetings from 2009 through 2015, more than 6.5 years, the American central banks have made no changes to short-term interest rates after last week's Federal Reserve meeting, the second of Jerome Powell era, which resulted in no change to interest rates. The Fed has now raised interest rates by 0.25%, 5 of the last 12 meetings, and I expect that to continue. The 10-year note closed on May 4th of 18 at 2.94%, up from 2.41% as of December 31st of 17. The last time the 10-year closed at or above 3% was on December 31st of 13. The last time the yield on the 10-year closed at 4% or above, back in 2007. 5% or above, all the way back to 2001. And finally, I found this kind of funny, no more happy hour. Almost 3 out of 4 workers surveyed, that's 73%, said they would give drinking up alcohol for life. Give it up for an immediate 10% raise in salary. And since, Doug, you don't drink at all.
Yeah, I don't have nothing to bargain with. Wow.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I had a great chance this past weekend in California to listen to Scott Minard, who's the Chief Investment Officer of Guggenheim. Doug and I have known Scott for many, many years. And I want to talk with you about what he's saying in the markets. He's saying that there's no question that within the next 24 months, we will start to see a recession here in the United States. I'm going to give you all the reasons that he said and let you make up your own mind from there. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Before we get started, something funny happened to Doug and I on our way to the station today.
Yes.
We were at the corner of First and College. Walnut.
First and Walnut, yeah.
And there was the common homeless person standing on the side of the road with a sign, but he had his sign facing the wrong direction. So
facing
basically
backwards.
It was blank.
It's a blank sign.
And you and I tried to convince him, brother, if you're going to try to do some commerce here, you need to turn this thing around. But he looked at us like we were idiots and just kept on going. Something else that happened funny this week. For the last month, I think, our newspaper, both the Herald Times and the Wall Street Journal, has been missing in action on Monday, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. We have no idea why. Well, we kept thinking, are they not bringing it, or is someone stealing it? But I would get to the office, Doug would too, sometimes as early as 6:15, and the paper would be gone. So we're like, they cannot be bringing this thing. Well, finally, Carolyn and Angela in our office decided on their own, with no encouragement from us, that they're going to crack this case.
Yes.
So they got to our office around 5 a.m., and the papers were there. So they parked around the back, snuck in the office, all the lights off, and they captured the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first time they say they captured him, it was made up, because Kevin in our office, they put a bag over his head and duct taped him to a chair to make it look like it. I'm out in California, and I'm getting pictures of what they say is the culprit, and they have him captured. Two women. So I'm like, this has got to be a joke. Well, it was a joke. Well, the next time they were on a stakeout, they actually did see the guy come by our office, pick up our papers, put them in a satchel, and they literally chased him out of the door screaming and yelling. Have you heard the story?
I have, yes.
About, hey, you quit stealing our papers. You know, we know who you are. The cops are after you. Well, this guy sprints off. I think he drops the papers. They didn't let it go. They got into the car
and
chased him down. They found him. This is at 5:30 in the morning.
Yes.
They're just, you know, basically what I told Carolyn is you scared him straight.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he's yelling back, quit harassing me. And we don't know if it's a homeless guy or not or what, but he certainly wasn't all there. And anyway, so I will report for the last 3 days.
We've had a paper.
Our newspaper's been there.
There you go.
So if your paper is missing on a normal and regular basis, call our office and we will provide a service of staking out the
claim. They know what they're doing. Angela and Carolyn, they know what they're doing.
All right, Doug. So Scott Minard, you've known Scott for years, and Scott is Chief Investment Officer at Guggenheim. We've known him since the early days where, you know, you could actually pick up a phone and call Scott
and
talk with him. He would go to conferences dressed in a
T-shirt,
like a t-shirt and shorts.
Depending on the location.
And he's a bodybuilder guy and never been married. Interesting guy. Has a dog that he loves. But now Scott's spending his spare time with central bankers. I mean, that's what he does. But he is thought of around the world as one of the top economic minds.
And oftentimes, if you watch the Milken Institute conference, he's one of the main speakers there. And you see him, and we've been forwarding pictures of him around this year with Secretary Mnuchin and different things.
Yeah, he's a big hitter.
Yeah.
So I had a chance to see him again this weekend.
Yeah.
We were at a conference, and Guggenheim manages the money for this institution that we were visiting. And he got up there and said, you know, hey, I know I've been making a lot of news lately because he's been talking about recession. But he made a fantastic case. And basically what he said to us, and he showed charts, and he's any time we've ever gotten to full employment, we have gone into a recession. So he said we are just a few quarters away from being in what they refer to as full employment. Now, I will say this. I looked at the Wall Street Journal this morning, and there was an article that said, if you want a job in America, there's a job for you. And they basically said there's one job opening for every unemployed person in America. Mm-hmm. He said when you get to that point, now you have wage pressure. So wages go up. We're already there. Wages go up. Then inflation is in place. And then the Fed steps in and they start raising rates and they basically squash this thing and they send you into a recession.
Mm-hmm.
He said he believes that we are about 7 to 8 quarters away from this happening.
From being in recession.
Now, he also said that there's a real, and anyone that's in construction knows this, there is a tremendous demand for labor, and he said that many of the laborers that do stuff like drywalling, landscaping, painting, whatever, are undocumented workers, and that they're all now very afraid, obviously, of showing up at work, feeling like they might be detained. So that working base is gone, which makes it more difficult. So now, he says, it's going to get so bad. And I think it's already there, where, Doug, you're running a drywall company, and I don't have anybody, and I go to your guys and say, hey, for $2 an hour more, will you come over here and drywall my house? And they say, sure, and they drop their tools on the job, and they walk
over there
and start drywalling.
Absolutely.
When that happens, and I think we're already tipping to there, then you start to move into what they call full employment. Wages go up. Inflation goes up. Interest rates then have to go up to squash the out of control economy. And that's where the recession happens. So, as I've been saying on this show and on Glass's show or whatever I've been talking about this, the Fed has caused every recession since the post-war era, World War II. Mm-hmm. So, Doug, I mean, he's a pretty smart guy, so I don't think we shouldn't be listening to him.
Absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing about this too, David, is when was the last time we were at full employment in this country? it's been an awful long time since we've been at what we call full employment. Wage inflation has not happened for about a decade. And it's really far from people's minds what wage inflation looks like. And so as we navigate through, and isn't it interesting we're navigating through full employment and wage inflation? Who would have thought we'd be having this discussion at this point? But we are, and that's why we always remind people that you have to be in a portfolio ready for any number of circumstances and outcomes.
He said if the Fed raises rates 2 more times this year and 4 times next, that we will be at a Fed funds rate of 3.25 to 3.5. If the 10-year's sitting at 3%, that's an inversion. He said we are headed into a recession period. Now, what he also said is our most recent memory of what a recession is and feels like is 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not a normal recession.
Right.
Think of recession as receding, contracting. It doesn't mean that you have to have a market that declines 40% or that you have to lose 25% of your jobs like we did in 2008. If you go back and look at normal recessions, they don't last that long. They're really not that painful. And if you're a working person and you're able to keep your job, it sometimes can be a fantastic opportunity for you to save more money and prepare for the future. So just because we say recession possibly could be on the horizon, and I believe that Scott's right. I believed all of his charts. I believe what he says because we've heard him before talk about the housing. I remember in 2006 or 7. We were both there, I believe, and he said that there will be a housing crisis of biblical proportion.
Yes, he did, in 2006, and people thought, what? And everyone was looking around like, what in the world is this guy talking about?
He went into the leverage in the market, subprime market, the no-doc loans. I mean, he went through it all, and basically, you know, you were thinking, well, when's this going to happen? Well, it was 2006, happened about 2 years later. So even, and he always says he's usually early to the game. And I'm just saying, folks, that this means that we probably will see some recession. I mean, Rod will tell you, when you've been on expansion as long as we've been on, I mean, recessions happen. Mm-hmm. You know, pullbacks happen. But that doesn't mean the world is over. So it is something we want to continue to talk about, keep you aware of, help you understand how to position assets so that you can weather through pretty much all storms. Because even in a recession, If stocks happen to go down because we expect growth to slow down, because remember what happens, folks, stocks move on speculation. That could be tomorrow on the speculation of the recession's happening in 2 years, and then it would just on reality. But not all asset classes go down during recessionary times. They pretty much did in 2008, but we had a financial crisis on our hands. Mm-hmm. So it was a deep and serious deal where if you were a McDonald's employee, they didn't know if you were going to be able to cash your check because of all the liquidity drying up in the market. And so that is not a normal recession. That was the Great Recession, practically a depression for many of us. And then remember, when the U.S. suffers, the whole world suffers. So as we've talked about investments, you think, okay, I'm going to diversify to emerging markets and other international, which is fine. But is there a reason that the emerging markets have done so well or that Europe's been doing better? It's because we're doing so well. When we do well, everyone does well. When we do bad, everyone does bad. It just, there's a lag, whether it's on the upside or lag on the downside. But, Duggar, that is the way it happens. You and I collectively have been doing this practically, 40 or 50 years? We've seen it all.
Yeah.
Any other comments about Minard before we move
on? Well, I just think, you know, when we take a step back, you know, there's in investing you can do top-down, which means take a macro look at everything and make decisions from there, or you can do bottoms up, which is taking a micro look. And what Scott Minard is talking about is more macro. He's not specifying certain sectors or certain asset classes that are going to go down. He's really just talking from a macro perspective that we could go into a recession. It's normal for us to occasionally have these recessions. But to David's point, we can't let the recession of 2008 be our only measuring post for that, because that was not a normal time frame.
So we also caution on junk bonds, because obviously as rates go up, companies that are below investment grade are going to have trouble because what they do is they don't pay off their debts, they refinance their debt, just like we do as America. So be cautious of junk bonds, below investment grade bonds. Now, if they're short term, you know, a year or two from maturity, you're probably not in that bad of shape. But if you're buying long-term high yield, which is another term for junk, I would be cautious about that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the lackluster pension returns and how it's putting a lot of pressure on the retirement systems around our country. It comes from a Wall Street Journal article on May 9th. We're going to talk about, you know, how pensions actually operate and how they can fudge the numbers to look more funded, or if they take a more reality approach, underfunded. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, I've been saying on the show, I've been saying in workshops, I've been saying in individual meetings that we really have got to prepare ourselves for higher taxes down the road, and that you need to do some things now to get out of the crosshairs of higher taxes down the road by taking full advantage of what's been given to us for the next 7 years. Interestingly enough, when I was talking about Scott Minard in the last segment, Scott said, when asked the question, did the tax cuts actually advance your prediction of a recession? He said, yes, possibly, because as we have accelerated growth because of some of these tax cuts, that could accelerate the problem quicker. So once again, when people say I expect this to happen late 2018 into 2019 as the potential recession starts to happen, no one knows exactly when these things happen. No one knows exactly when the effects on the market happen. But just know that it will happen. Do we know when? Do we know how deep and wide it will be? We have no idea. But we want to continue to inform you and educate you, and hopefully help you out as you weather through these times. Now, this is a great times. We're not saying they're bad times. These are great times. But here's the thing, and another illustration of why taxes are likely to be higher down the road. We used to talk about this a lot. We kind of quit talking about it. We don't beat dead horses too often. But the value of investments by public pension funds declined last quarter, and it's really widened the gap between what these funds say they will earn and what they actually make. Pension funds across the entire United States must estimate, this is how this works, they have to estimate how much they expect to earn on their investments, and that projection then determines the amount the government that is affiliated with the pension fund must pay into it. So I'm not talking about private pensions. So I'm not talking about a pension at GE or a pension over at Duke. I'm talking about the pension for your teachers, your firemen, your policemen, you know, your public employees. Obviously, if you have big returns, that reduces the need for the government to put too much in. But the forecasts don't always square with what's actually happening. Almost every retirement account out there, I mean, all across our country, will assume some type of an interest rate. Right now, the median annual rate of 7.25, according to Wilshire, is the average return pension plans expect to make. Now, over the past decade, they've actually earned far less than that. They've earned closer to about 5.5 or 6. So we have this massive underfunding of our pension system. Public retirement systems had an average of 72% of the assets that they needed to pay for retirement promises back in 2016. So you think it's going to get any better? Probably not. I'm just saying that there's the public plan database. You can see where Indiana falls if you'd like, or any pension that you're part of. But Doug, my point is this, that this thing's been happening and underfunded for a long time. And I remember back in 2008 when we had the big crisis, pension funds were saying, well, next year we think we're going to earn 7%. Mm-hmm. They think 7%. So it was massively underfunded. And a lot of them moved into more equities back in 2007 prior to mm-hmm. the crash. So that didn't work out very well for them. But someone's going to have to pay for this, because we're not going to default on our teachers. We're not going to default on our firemen. We're not going to default on our pensions to the policemen. In fact, places like California, there's a priority of payments that says we have to pay these things before we even pay the other things, including like interest on the debt that we've borrowed. Mm-hmm. So where's that money coming from? When we talk about taxes at the federal level, that's the federal level. That's what I've been focused on. But don't forget that you have state taxes too. Mm-hmm. In Indiana, you know, we're paying about 4.6% if you live here in Monroe County, all in with state and local income taxes. Well, what happens if you are in a state or in a county or whatever where you have a severely underfunded pension? What's going to happen? They're going to say, huh, we need to raise our tax by 1% mm-hmm. more to simply pay for the underfunded pension Absolutely. Liabilities, Doug.
Yeah. Well, and David, this is why we have talked about for many years now tax diversification on your overall holdings. You can do your best to control your spending, But what you can't control are things like taxes. We don't know exactly what the next move is, and it's not wouldn't be the first time in life that we have seen a tax rates change, and that's what people need to be aware of. And also, a good question for your financial professional is, what are the impacts of tax changes on my portfolio? Not just stock market changes, but tax changes.
So I'm looking here, of the S&P 1500 companies that have pension plans, 87% of the assets that they have are needed to cover their pension promises. They're in a little bit better shape. I mean, a lot of these places, I mean, Minnesota, Illinois, I mean, not only do they have great pensions, but they have escalators built in every single year. My grandma, Mary, so my grandpa, Burton, on my mom's side, she was a Bloomington firefighter, and he was a Bloomington firefighter for almost 30 years. He actually retired after having a heart attack. I told a new fireman the other day that I met, if you ever hear the story of a fireman falling off the back of a fire truck on 2nd Street in front of Station 2 with a heart attack, that was my grandpa. So, you know, it's kind of legendary in a way. But he retired, and he received a nice pension. You know, it wasn't great, but it was good enough to support what he and grandma had going on. And he died in 1981. And my grandma Mary continued to collect that fireman's pension, you know, up until just a handful of years ago. You know, almost 30 years past the time that grandpa died. None of these pensions, just like Social Security, none of these pensions, when they were created, anticipated anyone collecting on these plans for 30 and 40 years. Just like Social Security, when it was first created, you could take it at 65, but the life expectancy was in the early 60s. So if you made it to 65, no one expected you to live very long to take it. So you might take it a few years and then die. Well, pensions for people that are 70 and 80 and 90 years old today, the estimates on how long they would have to pay that were way, way much lower than they're actually paying out. So that's why everyone's killed their pensions, because I saw an article in one of these magazines, Time or something, that had a picture of a baby on the front, and it said, "Will this baby live to 120?"
Wow. Yeah.
So I mean, if you're a company trying to promise an income stream to you as a retiree, and you might live much longer than you even work for me, they can't take that risk. And that's why you've seen the death of the pension all across the country. You haven't really seen it at the municipality level. I mean, they still try to maintain it. But even in the state of Indiana, yeah, it's a decent pension, not great, but they don't have inflation increases.
Right.
So 20 years into retirement, you know, you're buying half of what you bought before.
Absolutely.
So you have to have other monies to come up with the things that you just need.
And David, you know, as I've been encouraging people, you don't have to have good financial habits just for a certain portion of your life. You have to have winning financial habits all of your life. And part of that is learning how to manage cash flow. And when we deal with these pensions, you know, a lot of people, the traditional view of retirement was just work a certain number of years, you know exactly what you're going to get, exactly when you're going to retire. Well, now we have to figure out the savings rate on our own. And not only that, we have to figure out the spending rate. And with pensions being gone, it's becoming a lot more difficult for people, because here's what we see quite a bit. Okay, I have this lump sum, a larger amount than I ever thought I'd roll over in my life, and now I want to get this, I want to get that, I want, you know, the question is, will it impact me here, will it impact me there? Well, those decisions may not impact you in the first 5 years, but 10 years down the road, they can have significant impacts. And without a pension, a guaranteed monthly income,
right,
it's very challenging.
So I just met with a couple who had a retirement income goal of, I think it was around $100,000, which is, this may seem a lot to you, I don't know. But when we projected out what their Social Security would be, each of them would receive around $30,000 a year. One of them had a pension, traditional pension. It was going to be $35,000 a year. So, and they were worried they weren't saving enough. And I'm like, all right, so the goal here is 100. We're going to have 70 from Social Security, 30 from your pension. So if you don't save a dime, you're going to collect 100% of what your goal is. Now, why are we saving? So we talked about other things that come up, long-term care, legacy planning, you know, the known unknowns, as you talked about. So, yeah, I think the key is, folks, when you're not sure of something and you don't know the things you don't know, sitting down with a financial advisor, working through a retirement plan, and I don't care if you're 45, 55, or 65, it's never too early, it's never too late to get and stay on the correct path. The same couple, Doug, we talked about building a retirement income strategy. When we come back, I'm going to talk about some of the different investments that are out there that are generating income. Because I think a lot of people, as they get in retirement, like, okay, how do I do this? How do I actually, you know, turn the spigot the other way and back to me? I've been putting money away forever, but how do I get it back out? Well, we're going to talk about some of the income investments that are out there that you probably will be interested in and could potentially share with your financial advisor. All right, let's take another break. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Okay, so did we even have a spring? I feel like we went from like 0 to 100 overnight. Yeah. Doug, we have our fishing tournament on Friday, and it's projected to be 89 degrees. Mm-hmm. I was in San Francisco a few days ago. It was 59 degrees in San Francisco.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean,
jackets
it's known to be
sweaters.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, I mean, jeans, jackets, sweaters. Yeah, it's known to be chilly in San Fran. Went to Napa for a couple days. Mm-hmm. I've never been there. That was fun. Enjoyed that a lot. Did a hot air balloon ride one day. That was really cool. I mean, you only live once, right?
So absolutely.
Sometimes you have to experience these things. But, yeah, so out there, spent a couple days for fun and then 3 days of conference, and that's where I got to hear Scott Minard. Yeah, so this hot weather, I'm not sure about this. Prom is on Saturday. Will is headed to prom.
Nice.
Junior this year. And, so all suited up, has a cool-looking tux, and we'll be headed to prom. So I think it's going to be 90 degrees, so I'm sure it'll be a little sticky. I don't know. Here's a question, folks. So when you go to the prom, you want to drive the nicest car in your fleet, right? I think I remember that, and it happened to be a 1983 Nissan Stanza. That was the nicest car in our fleet. But you know what? Whatever. So my son has the desire to drive the nicest car in our fleet, which I think I'm okay with, but I really don't know. But here's the funny thing. I have let every one of my friend's kids drive the nicest car in my fleet, which my fleet's only three cars. It sounds like my fleet. I'm not talking about 15 cars.
Sure.
So the nicest car in my fleet. I let their my friend's kids drive it without any reluctancy whatsoever. But my own kid, I'm having reluctancy over letting him drive my car. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Well, it's probably just natural.
Little therapy session here, Doug.
Natural parenting, I would say, maybe.
No, I know too much.
Maybe you know too much. And maybe it would be easier to forgive somebody else's child if they had a little fender bender than it would be your own. I don't know. I mean,
those are all great answers.
I guess.
You'll be facing this before you know it.
I know it.
Daniel will be in the minivan.
That's right.
In fact, Doug, I've already offered up the minivan, your minivan, for Will to take.
Oh, good.
So just leave the keys in it, put it out in the driveway. We'll pick it up around 3.
Sounds good.
All right, Doug, people are always looking for income-generating investments. So I thought what I would do is just kind of go through some of the more common ones and have you help educate people on them. I'm going to start off with annuities because I had a conversation today with someone who came in who owns an annuity that we put them into the annuity, and he's like, I don't want annuities. I'm like, wait a second. You have a fixed annuity. And he said, what's that mean? And Doug, I did your line. Mm-hmm. A fixed annuity is to an insurance company what a CD is to a bank. What do you mean by that? It's fixed. We have a fixed interest rate. We have a fixed maturity. It's insured by the insurance company. It's backed by the Indiana Guarantee Association. It's a fixed annuity. Finally, after giving him a copy of our book, Chapter 6, on annuities,
absolutely.
I said, read this. If you have any more questions, let me know. Well, by the time he left, he was fine. But people have a preconceived notion about things, and I think annuities are obviously one of them. But, in the fixed annuity realm right now, Duggar, we're seeing stuff, 3 to 5 years out, paying 2.5% to 3%. Mm-hmm. So rates are certainly on the rise. One of the things I know we've used also are fixed indexed annuities where it's fixed, but the interest is credited based on the index of the market. But the only difference is it can be a little bit unreliable, even though you might gain a little bit more than you would in a traditional fixed.
That's right. It is as a principal is fixed, return is not fixed. And so you could have a bang-up year, or you could have a pretty flat year.
Some of the other investments that are out there that produce income and they have been beaten up this year are things like real estate investment trust, business development corporations. Talk a little bit about what REITs are and how and why they actually produce the income they produce.
Well, REITs are just an opportunity for the average person to buy into large commercial property for the most part, or industrial or medical buildings that they couldn't buy on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of is a pool, much like a mutual fund, in that you have many investors who are putting their money into one thing and they're buying into an objective. And the objective of the REIT may be to own medical properties or office properties. And that manager goes out across the country, and they buy all these different types of buildings that fit the criteria. But in 1960, the Real Estate Investment Trust Act came in, and what it forced Real Estate Investment Trust to do is to distribute 90% of all the rents that come in the form of dividends out to the investors. So what you're looking at there is the opportunity for you to buy real estate you probably couldn't buy on your own, pool that risk with investors, get a nice steady return of income out of it, and then at the end of the trust, because it is a trust, then they sell the properties and you may have a gain, you may have a loss. There's no guarantee with that, but you do collect a nice dividend along the way.
And there's publicly traded REITs, there's non-traded REITs, but to Doug's point, the board of directors each quarter meet with publicly traded companies, and then they determine what that dividend will be for the next quarter. It has nothing to do with what their earnings are. In fact, there's companies now that are paying out dividends that aren't making any money.
Right.
But a REIT, as Doug said, the income comes from rents. So they must pass through 90% of the net income to the shareholders. Now, the reason that caveat's there is that means that a REIT does not have to pay tax at the corporate level. The tax is paid at the shareholder level. Unlike Coca-Cola or any other corporation out there, they pay tax at the corporate level. They pay a dividend, and you pay tax on your dividend. So that's how a REIT works. BDCs, Business Development Corporations, very, very similar structure. In fact, that they operate under sort of the REIT tax law that 90% has to be passed through. But these are loans. These are loans that are made to private North American companies. And from Franklin Square, we got this information that 94% of companies in America with $20 million or more of sales are private companies. So when we invest in stocks and we invest in bonds, we're only really investing in that 14% or 16% of the companies that are out there. So BDC allows you access to that market.
And keep in mind, it's not only individual investors, but you bring up mutual funds. There's 8,000 different mutual funds out there, institutions, hedge funds, private equity firms. These people are all buying positions in those same 14% of stocks versus the private equity.
Well, mentioning that, traditional bonds, we're starting to see yields finally rise on those. Mm-hmm. If you have a bond and rates have gone up, then your value's gone down a little bit. Don't sweat it. You'll keep getting your interest. It'll be fine. But right now we're seeing stuff out, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, paying 3.5%, 4%, 4.5%, pretty decent yields. So I think, you know, even though everyone says, don't be in bonds, rates are going up, there's still a good reason to be in bonds. And in fact, I would argue that I would much rather own a bond bought today than one bought 7 months ago.
Absolutely.
I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me when people
say
that.
And we weren't having this conversation a year or two ago.
No. But as, you know, Rod pointed out that when you hear people say, you know, I want stocks, not bonds, those are traders. Those are people that are saying, where's the best value? Well, I can tell you that there's some decent value in these bonds. According to Scott Minard, he thinks rates are pretty well leveled out on the short side, might raise a little bit on the long side, but he sees more of an inversion or a continued flattening than anything else. Preferred stocks, kind of a tweener, Dugger, and we don't have a lot of time to go through this, but that's not a stock, not a bond, kind of right between. The only difference is the dividend is more of a fixed or contractual investment. They have to pay you that before they can pay bondholders their interest before they pay the common stockholder dividends. So it gives you a little preferred. But there's a lot of things. I'm even seeing CD rates at local banks, you know, offering specials 13 months at 1-something%, online banks, money market accounts, short duration funds. You guys had a lunch with someone the other day.
2%.
Yeah. So if you're having money just sitting in a savings account doing nothing, just know that rates have crept up enough to now there are
some
other things out there. All right. It was so popular last week, Doug, I brought it back for this week.
All right.
Questions of the week. Had a lot of questions every week, every day, so we accumulate some of those and we'll bring them to you next. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Just a segment and a half left in the program. If you missed any of it, you can always check us out on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. or on WGCLradio.com, or subscribe to iTunes or Google Play Music, and you can listen at your leisure. All right, Doug, we used to do a whole show on questions of the week. We then shoved it down to a segment, and it was so enjoyable. It worked so well that we quit doing it, but we brought it back last week and have had some good response, so let's fire away.
By popular demand, here it comes back. Here's a question. If I don't have the money to pay for a Roth conversion, what are some other ideas that I can use to pay off my taxes?
Great. So I mentioned last week that if you're over 59 and a half, you can convert to a Roth. You can pay the taxes with that IRA money, and not be penalized. But ideally, if you have money on the outside to pay the tax, that's better. So if you're under 59.5 and you do an in-plan conversion, simply go to the HR folks or adjust your W-9 and say, hey, I'd like to withhold some more money on every single check. So let's say you converted $10,000 and you're going to need $2,000 paid in for taxes. Go to your HR, write in extra tax withholdings at the bottom for the number of weeks that you have remaining, and boom, that's a great way to pay the tax man off.
Wonderful. All right. Tell me again, another person says, and they were asking because they didn't quite understand this, so they need you to go through it again, how to do a backdoor Roth contribution.
Okay. This can be a little complicated, but I'm going to make it really simple. Everyone, regardless of income, assets, whatever, can make a, if you have earned income, can make a non-deductible IRA contribution. No deduction. Bam. You immediately convert it to a Roth. Since there's no gain, there's no tax. So regardless of your income level, you can make a backdoor Roth conversion. Now, if you have other IRAs, and this is where it gets a little complicated, they are included as part of the overall IRA balance. So this is going to be a little complicated for radio. Let's say I have a $95,000 IRA, and I make a $5,000 non-deductible contribution and then want to convert it. Well, only 1/20th of my IRA conversion would be considered tax-free because that other $95,000 was considered already not taxed, which gets included on a pro rata basis into that conversion. So, saying all that, probably make your head spin, but I'm just saying if you're going to do a backdoor Roth, consult an advisor before doing it.
Okay, here's a planning question. I'm thinking about refinancing my house and paying off other debts so I can retire and have just one payment that I can handle. What do you think of that idea, and have you recommended this to other people in the past?
Oh, we've recommended it, but, you know, I think you have to first step back, and, Doug, you can comment on this. How did I get into the position I'm in? Mm-hmm. You know, if that position was just, you know, being careless or being – I'm generous, right? I mean, everyone's generous. We give money away. We give our time away. But sometimes you can be too generous, and you mm-hmm. give away too much money, kids, grandkids, you name it. If that's how you got in this problem, you're going to have to be able to say no. So if it's just a matter of consolidating to get a better payment to retire, sure, we've recommended that before. But I think each situation is different, and there's a lot of psychology that goes into making that decision, not just math.
Absolutely. Okay, here's another question. I'm a widow and have been for 13 years. Mm-hmm. I met a great person a few years ago and we want to get married. I'm currently on widow's benefits with Social Security and have been for a few years. I'm planning to stay on my late husband's benefit until I'm 70 and then move to my own. I had heard you talk at IU School of Education function. It really helped me out and allowed me to retire early. Thank you. My question is, if I remarried, would my Social Security benefits be affected in any way?
Nope. That's the good news. So if you are on widow's benefits or whatever, and you are already taking benefits, and you remarry, then your benefit will not change, and you can do exactly what it is you intended to do in the first place. Now, I had a situation, it's funny you bring this up, had a situation where a lady was 59, and she would be 60 in October. This was a handful of years ago, and she wanted to get remarried, and she was a widow. And I said, hey, if you can plan a late October wedding instead of the spring wedding, we can get you on widow's benefits. You can stay on widow's benefits, then marry, and you can continue to receive them without any adjustments whatsoever. So, needless to say, that May wedding turned into an October wedding, and she's still on those benefits today.
Gotcha. Okay, last question. I'm planning to retire in a few months. It was actually forced on me. I am 63 and need to figure out health care. Can you direct me a little?
Yeah, I mean, most plans allow you to stay on their plan in COBRA, and if you lost your job, sometimes it can be as much as 36 months. Now, keep in mind, you're going to pay the full boat. So if you were paying, let's say, $100 a month for your health care before, it's probably going to be $500 a month. So most of the time, the COBRA plan is the way to go, but you also can go on the exchange and talk to a private insurance company to see what else is available. But if you want no disruption in pretty much what you've been having when you're working, then probably COBRA would be the best way to go. Now, if you just quit, 18 months is typically the limit that you could stay on their health insurance. All right, Duggar, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. If you have a question that you'd like answered, feel free to shoot us an email at cfci.us. Just contact us through the website. Put your question in. We'll answer it, and then we may use it on the air. If it's a complex question, then we'll say, hey, let's pick up the phone and talk about it. So we have five different advisors in our office that are more than happy to help you out. Like I mentioned, Doug, you and I will be fishing tomorrow on Friday at the CFCI second annual fishing tournament.
We'll be fishing and winning
catching.
The tournament.
We're going to be catching.
Catching.
No fishing going on.
That's right.
I sent out a little video last night after I prepared the vote. Did you enjoy that?
I did, yeah.
I had five rods and reels ready to go.
Five rods and reels ready to go.
Every possible scenario.
Yep.
It's going to be 89 degrees, so don't dress too warm.
Too warm.
You want to dress, shorten up tomorrow for sure. That'll be a lot of fun. Again, if you missed any of the show, you can always catch it on Saturday morning at 9 or on WGCLRadio.com or subscribe to the iTunes or Google Play Music, and you can listen to it at your leisure. Next week, I'll actually be in Philadelphia for the EdSlot Elite IRA Advisor meeting, so I'm looking forward to that. What's funny, Doug, is I'm going to go out one day early because a bunch of friends are going to go fishing out in Philly.
Wow.
So I'm going to go out one day early and then
go. Some striper fishing maybe?
We're going to do striper fishing,
up
north of Philly.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard anything from them besides just make sure that you're there,
get there a day early.
So, but you know how guys are. We'll be texting the day before.
The day before, yeah.
Hey, do this, do that. Show up here, show up there. That's why my wife gets so frustrated with my son in his lack of preparation. It's a guy thing.
It is.
For the most part. If you're not that way, then you're just an extraordinary person. But most men,
we're
different.
Yeah.
We don't think about it until it's time. Doug, so next week will be someone will be in here doing the show. I know you guys will take care of it. You may have a funeral to officiate next week, so we'll see if it's you. We'll see if it's Wayne. We'll see if it's Rhino. We'll see if I have to come in and record early.
It may be a combination of a little bit of everything. Who knows?
It may be. But this is going to be a great weekend. I mean, obviously, we have prom this weekend. Mm-hmm. We've got a bunch of graduations coming up. All the IU students are now gone for the most part.
And Mother's Day.
And I was getting ready to say that to my mom, Rhea. Happy Mother's Day. Love you like no one's loved you before. Jeannie, thank you for all you've done. Happy Mother's Day as well. And Duggar, even though your mom lives
happy
many
Mother's
states
Day
away.
Happy Mother's Day to Martha Hughes.
And
Happy Mother's Day.
Our wives.
And our wives.
Don't forget them.
Exactly right.
I've been telling Will, she's your mom. She's not my mom. So you're old enough now. You have a car. You know you need to go buy something for her.
Absolutely.
So I saw a card on the table when I got home the other night, and it said Madre on it.
Madre.
From your son. So hope you all enjoyed the show. And again, we'll be back next week on Thursday to deliver another outstanding show. But I won't be here. I may be calling in from Philadelphia, but we'll see how it all shakes out.
Sounds great.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.